Welcome to In Between Expats, and thank you for listening to the show. My name is Rodrigo Bravo, and let's get started. I want to start today's episode by thanking all those who have listened to this very young podcast. So far, the episodes have been streamed in 19 countries, with the Czech Republic, United States, and Portugal in the lead. I hope you continue listening, as well as sharing this podcast with friends and family. I also want to thank my first guests, the very talented painter April Popko, as well as the inspiring entrepreneurs Douglas Wong, Emil Jimenez, and Fernando Davila. This episode is dedicated to the late Dr. and Mrs. Chalam. Not only did they raise a professional, but above all, a good human being. Also, during the episode, my guest talks about feeling foreign as a child. The same happened to me when I moved back to the United States from Ecuador in 1984. And one way to Americanize me was through music. In this case, it was LA radio station K-Rock, and the one responsible was Cousin George. My guest today is Dr. Babu Chalam, an urgent and acute care doctor in the state of Washington. Babu hails from southeastern Georgia, and given the times, the episode can be divided in two parts. His experience as a physician during the pandemic, as well as having been fully inoculated against the COVID-19 virus. And the second is his experience as an expat, ranging from early travels to Tamil-speaking India, to Heidelberg, Germany, to Ostrava and Prague, Czech Republic. Thank you, Babu, for being on this program. Your story is quintessentially American. Your family moved to the United States from India. Your late father was also a physician. Tell me your family story.
Yeah, so Rodrigo, it's great to be with you and everything. And so my parents emigrated from India here in the mid-70s. And then my sister was born subsequently after that in the late 70s. And I was born in 1980. I grew up in Southeast Georgia, and that's where the predominant amount of my childhood was spent. My mom, she was basically stayed at home and helped raise me and my sister while my dad worked as a physician. He did hospital work and things of that nature. And I've had a bit of a medical background, and I kind of saw how that was, especially during my childhood, just him being, you know, gone most of the time. But he made the best of it. And I actually had a very great childhood. And basically, the one thing about being a doctor, and especially coming into the country and all that stuff, I know the focus is basically sometimes on my dad, but my mom had a great deal to play with this as well, because she was very supportive of him and also, you know, helping raise two kids. The funny thing is that even during the summers during my childhood, my father would be busy working and my mom would actually take me and my sister to India. And imagine traveling all the way over there with two little kids. The first time I went to India, I was 6 months old. So that had a profound effect on me. Basically, I didn't get into medicine directly because I studied other things like German international business. And that's how I got to live in Europe in my early 20s. I'm 41 years old right now.
What part of India were they from?
My father was from Chennai, which is in Southeast India. My mother, who's also deceased, she passed away back in 2007. She was from Mumbai. That's on the west coast of India.
What kind of memories do you have in India as a child?
The funny thing is this, it's such a great question you're asking, because as you know, my father passed away last year and he was our last surviving parent. So I had to go back to Georgia and take care of my sister. And I had to take care of his estate, things of that nature, our childhood home, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I ran across all these pictures from like the 1980s and even pictures I never seen in my parents before, like when they were school children and also when they're younger. I mean, I saw a picture of my dad when he was young and in medical school. He had a suit on, he had a full head of hair, and he was in his 20s. I've never seen that picture before. And just to go back to your question, some of the memories I had in India, going through all those pictures, just of us hanging out with all my uncles, because my both of my parents came from big families. My dad was one of 10 brothers. My mother was one of 8 siblings. And so we have a lot of cousins. And just the childhood photos, the things we would do, the mischief that we would cause. And also back then, Tamil was the native language of my parents. And back in my childhood, I spoke Tamil very fluently. And kids have a way of picking up languages a lot better and more naturally than adults do because they have less reservations and their brains are still developing. And so I don't speak Tamil as well nowadays, unfortunately, and I certainly cannot read and write in it. And so I'm going through all that stuff, just the stark contrast in culture. And I think the most important thing was to always stay humble and to stay grounded in your principles, because there's a lot of people who are doing a lot worse than, let's say, you and I are, okay? And there's poverty around the world, and poverty comes in all shapes and sizes. And when you go to India as a child, you see real poverty. Then you come back to America, you have your electricity, your video games, all that stuff. So I feel very privileged that I was able to get all that in my childhood.
And when you would go to India, were you the American cousin or were you just another Indian kid there? And vice versa, when you would get back to Georgia, were you the Indian kid or just another American kid?
Oh, man, that's another great question. When I went to India, I was the, we have a term called ABCD, American Born Confused Desi. In the Indian community, they know what that means, and it's a big joking matter. That's exactly what I was. I was the American cousin, the Yankee Doodle American cousin. We would spend the entire summer in India. That means 3 months. And the very beginning, of course, I had the American accent and everything like that. As the weeks went on and everybody was speaking Tamil around me, then I would change my accent to more of a British or an Indian accent when I speak English. And then I would transition into some Tamil words and Tamil sentences. But I was totally the American cousin. I would get picked on. It would make me mad. And then the funny thing is that growing up in Southeast Georgia, yep, I'm the Indian kid. Both of those different identities, it was something I had to... I don't want to say deal with, but it was just part of my upbringing and how to deal with people.
This show is about the expat experience of my guests, but given the times, let's start with your experience from the last year as an urgent and acute care doctor. Please paint me a picture of what you have experienced in regards to this pandemic.
It's now almost about the end of March right now, and it's been just over a year since we've had to deal with the big shutdown and the upbringing of this pandemic. The one thing about this pandemic is that this really started in December of 2019. And in fact, even in my clinic, I can't give away too much due to patient confidentiality, but we had actually the first documented case of COVID in our clinic. I live about 16 miles north of Seattle, Washington, and Washington State in the United States, Washington State was the first state to get the first documented case. I think it was either that or California. I can't remember, but we were one of the first states to really shut down. And it was just a brand new thing. And we didn't know what to deal with. And our guidelines and our advice, it was changing day to day, week to week. I remember back in middle of February, patients were asking me, hey, you know, can I go to my business conference? Can I fly over here? I'm like, sure, go. If you feel fine, do that. Then a week later, after March 10th, when everything shut down and everything, that our advice changed, you know, oh no, don't travel anywhere, don't do anything. And then later on, you got to wear a mask, physical distancing, hygiene, everything like that. One thing we do for our patients who come with respiratory conditions, Rodrigo, is we give them a breathing treatment. We give them a nebulizer breathing treatment. Basically, they put this plastic tube in their mouth and they breathe an aerosolized medication, aerosolized steam to help with their lung functions. And we do that in hopes that it'll improve. We won't have to get them into the hospital. We won't have to send them to an emergency room, anything like that. We stopped doing that last year because, as we all know, COVID-19 is an aerosolized virus, and you can actually spread COVID by doing that. And I'm not saying that we spread COVID in our clinic by any means whatsoever, but that was a precaution that we just had to take. So that was one change that we had to do. And then I told people basically, please do not travel unless it's absolutely necessary. And as we've touched on, I go to Europe every year just because I have all friends throughout Germany when I lived there, still got friends in Czech Republic, and I got friends all right throughout other countries in Europe and everything like that. And I understand people don't want to stay locked in, but there were people sometimes traveling, sometimes they tell me, yeah, I just came back from Croatia. I remember one patient said that, and I'd like to get a COVID test in the summertime. And I'm like, man, I didn't say this to him, but I was like, man, why are you traveling? And he told me it was a very vacation. I kind of wish people would hold off on that unless it's absolutely necessary. But now we're seeing that. I know a lot of German tourists are going to Mallorca, for example, right now. That was the one thing. And just kind of dealing with it as the year went on. And the one thing was that at the beginning, we thought maybe this will last 1 or 2 months. And unfortunately, it's been about a year now, and we're hoping that we can get enough people vaccinated, and hopefully there won't be as much of a spread of the virus. As we all know, you look at the news, you look at statistics, some things, you know, we still have to take certain precautions.
What were the sensations you had after the first and second shot? This is coming from a person who lives in the Czech Republic, and we are looking at perhaps August to get the first shot. You know, those who are 65 and younger, the rollout in Europe has been very slow, as you probably know.
I, you know, lived in Germany. I studied the German language and I speak German fluently. So I've been paying attention to this in German, what's been going on with Germany with their slow vaccine rollout as well. Wow. I didn't know it was that dire in the Czech Republic. I'm sorry to say that. But just to go back to my experience. So the first vaccine data came out in, let's say, November, December of last year. And I got the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. That was the one vaccine that I think the United States government had had bought a whole bunch of vaccine vials and had it available. And so my first vaccine dose was 1 week before Christmas of last year. So it was around December 17th. And then about 3 weeks later, I got my second dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. The first dose of the vaccine, I knew that I wanted to give myself, let's say, a day and a half for a potential recovery in case I felt fevers or chills or anything like that. When I got the first dose of the vaccine, I felt fine. Nothing happened. I was observed for 15 minutes. And the one thing was that it was so well organized because it was done through my hospital group. And so I went home and I had a meal. And I think later on during that day after the first dose, I felt some fatigue, some chills. And I think I took a nap in the middle of the day. Other than that, I felt fine. I did not have to take any antipyretics, any medicines against any fevers. Didn't have to take, for example, any acetaminophen, or I didn't have to take any naproxen, and I felt fine. And then it was really just for one day I felt tired. Now, the second dose has a more pronounced effect. I knew what the possibility of that second dose is because the second dose is supposed to really jumpstart your immune system so that you really mass produce the antibodies that are going to fight COVID. So I got the second dose and I felt fine, observed for 15 minutes, and I went home. I actually ordered some food. I ordered some soup, ordered some noodles, and because I kind of expected that I was going to get rather sick. And of course, I was right. The fevers, chills, body aches, fatigue. I was really, really run down that day. And I took a nap. I ate my soup and noodles. And I just lay around. I had the next day off. And I did that on purpose so that I would get a full day to recover. And I went to bed later that night. And I really didn't want to take any medicine. But I finally gave in. And I did take some Tylenol, otherwise known as acetaminophen. I did take that. And not going to lie to you, I sweated my fever out. I sweated through my bed sheets, I think two or three times. I had to change all my clothes like twice in the middle of the night. And what I did was for the next morning, I'm usually a normal early riser. I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning because of my line of work. And on my off days, I usually wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, just automatically. I set my alarm for 8 o'clock in the morning the next day. I went to bed, I think at 10 p.m. that following night, and my alarm rang. And I swear I could have stayed in bed for another 2 or 3 hours, probably. I was so tired, but I forced myself to get out of bed. You got to get up. You got to get moving. Got to get the blood flowing, and made myself some coffee, lay around. And I was tired for about one day. And then the next day I felt okay. I still felt a teeny tiny little bit tired, but I didn't need to take any medicines. I went to work. And ever since then, I've been fine. And those are all normal responses of your body to producing antibody against the COVID-19 virus.
And ever since then, you never felt any type of repercussions as a result of the vaccine?
None whatsoever. And if I can add one more thing, one of my friends who's also in the medical field, she's pregnant and she decided to get vaccinated. I know there's some precautions about that. And at the beginning, I wasn't telling all of our colleagues who are pregnant, oh, you need to get vaccinated or anything like that. We kind of told them, just have some caution. If you want to observe, that's fine. But my friend, she's very confident in it. And she knows the biochemistry and everything like that. She decided to get vaccinated and she's doing just fine. And in fact, there's more data coming out that women who are vaccinated while they're pregnant, they're not having any adverse side effects. It doesn't cause any infertility, nothing like that. That's all been proven to be false. And in fact, the first babies that are being born, they're being born with antibody against COVID, which is a good thing. They're kind of already being protected. So we still need to find out more data. We need to do more research and see what's going on. But so far, I don't see any big contraindication to getting the vaccine, you know, unless you have a certain allergy to past vaccine shots, et cetera. So in that case, I would exercise a little bit of caution.
Circling back to the Czech Republic, I read that about 60% of the population is still wary about the vaccine. And as you said, a lot of data is still coming out, and a lot of things have been said and debated in this country, as in the US and in other places as well. Have you been debating people who are skeptical about the vaccine?
The one thing about this is that my job is to be kind of the teacher and to kind of disseminate information, to give information. And I kind of have to let people make up their minds, whether it's for the worse or not. And I have to kind of accept it. I try not to get into too much of a debate. I learned very early on that if you argue and debate with people, you're just going to, if you're in my position as a doctor, you're just going to shove them even further away. And they're going to be even less likely to take your advice. I sort of just give them the facts and I tell them, listen, I got the vaccine. This is what happened with me. And this is what we know. And this is what is still to be determined. I do not believe there's any reason to worry about anything. Of course, certain things are going to happen. I know there are some issues going on with the AstraZeneca vaccine. And I know that a lot of European countries and their medical commissions have stopped giving it. And now they're starting to give it again. And then the AstraZeneca, that's a whole story for another day, because now the efficacy they were stating was very good at 75%. Now it may be between 64 and 70%. So that all needs to be investigated, rightfully so. But I personally don't feel like there is any causation to, let's say, getting any blood clots or anything like that with the AstraZeneca vaccine, just because I think those incidents where there were blood clots, it was comparable to the general population. That means that you can't make a correlation or a causation directly with the vaccine. My advice would be to try to get as many facts as possible. And of course, it's so difficult to ascertain exactly what's information versus misinformation. But just to go back to your question, I don't get into debates. I just tell them, listen, these are the recommendations. I got this. My doctor colleagues got the vaccine. My nursing colleagues got it. In fact, two of my friends who are teachers got vaccinated here as well. And they're all doing just fine. Listen, the arrows are pointing towards our favor versus, let's say, the negative aspects. And I think you should weigh your decision on that.
I'm going to do a sharp turn now. And as this show is about expat life and expats, your experience as an expat obviously predates medical school. You had stints as an expat, as a student, as an intern. Tell me about those experiences. I know that you also lived in the Caribbean.
So when I was 18 years old in the late 90s, I came to the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia, and did not know what I wanted to do with my life. So I changed my major a whole bunch of times. And for some strange reason, I happened upon a beginning German language course when I was 19 years old. And little did I know that that little thing would change my life completely. And kind of to go back to some of my other international experiences, being born in the United States and then traveling to India, around that time, I realized that I had also lost my ability to speak the Tamil language because I didn't go to India that often. And in all honesty, it kind of made me kind of mad and jealous because I really wanted to be a bilingual person. And so I thought to myself, what can I do to impress my Indian relatives? What's a language that I can learn that I know that they have no chance of learning? Not that it was completely about that, but I thought, German, let's give it a shot. So I did go travel to Germany often, and I even went in the summer of 2000. I spent about 6 weeks there as a student, and it wasn't to live there. It was just 6 weeks in the summertime. But during my studies, following that, I changed my majors one final time. I was a double major, international business major. In the fall of 2001 up until late summer 2002, I was still studying at the University of Georgia. But during this time, I lived as an exchange student in Heidelberg, Germany. And I try not to dwell so much on the past, but all these years have gone by. And I look at those days, Rodrigo, and I look at them as probably some of the best days of my life. I was 21 at the time. I did so many things by myself. Like I had to move into my dorm by myself. I had to get a student visa, go to the immigration offices, do all of this in German language, by the way. And I had a scholarship from the German government. I actually felt like I was rich. I had enough money for food, for paying for my studies, for living in my dorm. And I even had extra money for traveling. I traveled throughout Germany, of course, but I also traveled to Denmark. I traveled to England during that time. I went to Greece. I went to Italy. I mean, I could tell you all sorts of stories I did. And also just being involved in the German university system was just such a unique experience. I feel fortunate and privileged that I was able to do that. And then I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I did that during my studies. After that, I went back to University of Georgia to wrap up my international business degree. In 2003, I'm trying to find a job in the United States. Nobody's hiring. Well, what am I going to do? I'm going to go back to Europe. And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do in 2003 or where I was going to go. And as you know, I got involved with international internship program known as ISEC. And so I went to Ostrava, Czech Republic, and I worked for a printing press there. And then later on, I did some work with a British company in Prague in 2004. In the summer of 2004, I thought to myself, what can I, you know, I want to do something with that's, you know, has more stability. I want to feel like I'm doing something noble. And so I thought to myself, what can I do? And during that summer, I had a conversation with my parents and I talked to my dad. You know, both of my parents were alive at that time. And I was 24 years old at that time. And I told dad, listen, I've gone through a lot. I put a foreign language in my head. I've stepped foot on over 28 different countries in my lifetime. I feel like I have the maturity and the acumen and I'm ready to go into medicine and I want to be a doctor like you. He was shocked. I'm sure a part of him was very pleased to hear that. I was talking with my dad, my mom at the time. Now imagine this, I'm in the Czech Republic. My parents are down there in Southeast Georgia. My mom is watching my dad talk to me over the phone. And then, hearing the words out of my dad's voice. She's not hearing, but she's getting the sense of what we're talking about. Later on, he gives the phone to my mom. And my mom is like, Babu, it sounds like you're making a change in your career and your lifestyle. I told her, yes, I am. It was my mom's dream that one of her children becomes a doctor. And a week later, she actually mailed me a handwritten letter to the Czech Republic stating that, listen, I know we talk on the phone often, but I wanted to write you a letter stating that just because it's always been my dream that one of my children become a doctor. And you have our support. We love you and everything like that. And I still have that handwritten letter in a portrait of her, since she passed away while I was in medical school later on. So that's how I got into medicine. I went back to the United States in 2005 and did my pre-medical studies. And then I did my medical studies. Part of it was done on a Caribbean island in St. Martin. And then I lived in New York. Then I did my residency training in the state of Georgia. And then I practiced in other places, including Colorado. I've even done some work on some Navajo reservations in Arizona, New Mexico. And now I'm in Washington State.
My former classmates in high school who eventually became doctors, I mean, they did a straight path from high school to college to medical school and onto residency without looking left or right. But you took a few turns. What advice would you have for that student who is perhaps thinking about doing a few turns before settling down?
Do those turns. The one thing is this, is that I swear by this. If I would have gone straight into medicine, let's say when I was 18 years old, I'm going to be a biochemistry major or a biology major. I probably would have burnt out. I probably would have failed out of it. And the one thing about this is that medicine is a real challenge. I've seen colleagues fail out of medical school. And then after you do medical school, you're supposed to get into a medical residency. You're not quite done yet. Unfortunately, I saw a colleague. She was asked to leave her medical residency, not because she's a bad person, but just didn't make it. And so those types of things can happen. And I think with me personally, going through all those experiences of learning foreign languages, living in other countries, traveling to other countries, meeting friends all over the world. You and I both have a huge group of friends from all sorts of different countries and different backgrounds. When I lived in the Czech Republic, I made friends from Turkey, from Mexico, Hungary, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Finland, etc., etc., etc. I'm still friends with a lot of those people up until this day. And the last time you and I met was in the summer of 2019 when
That's correct.
Some of my other friends and I, we decided, hey, we need to have a big reunion and we need to meet up and hang out. And another friend of ours who's from New Zealand, who lives in Holland. I'm so happy we did plan that for 2019 versus 2020.
Exactly. And that friend from New Zealand is supposed to be on this show at some point.
Sharon, we're calling you out right now. All of those things led to that decision point to go into medicine, and it led to a more informed, better decision. Although medicine is the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life. And by the way, I'm not infallible. I can still make mistakes. And I have to live with my accomplishments, and I also have to live with, oh man, I should have done this better.
How much of a culture shock did you experience in all those places? Did you perhaps face racism?
Yeah, absolutely. And those are all great questions. And I'll start with Germany and then I'll transition to the Czech Republic. The thing with Germany was that when I lived in Germany when I was 21, I was already fluent in German. I knew how to go about. And in fact, I only spoke German. The only time I would speak English was when I talked to my parents once a week. I did not really sense any direct prejudice towards me, probably because I spoke German. And the one thing about this, I'll tell you a story. When I was a student in Germany, of course, there are idiots everywhere. And there was going to be a neo-Nazi march in Heidelberg. On that day, I actually decided to stay in my room. Anyway, those neo-Nazis, of course, there's probably a few neo-Nazi demonstrators. Well, in comparison to that, there's a bunch of hundred or even thousands of people protesting against them. Right. Okay. The people in Heidelberg, the students, they were like, not in our town. No chance. And that's what happens. Those neo-Nazis never made it past the train station. They were turned away, had to go back. The police told them and all the stuff, hey, can't go past here. Get out. So they got out. And later on that late afternoon or evening, I was like, well, let me see if all of this has subsided. And granted, this is 2001. Okay. There was no social media, no smartphones. There's no way for me for really checking, hey, are there Nazis on the street? I went outside, completely normal. I went to my student cafe, got a hot chocolate, did some studying, went back home. I didn't feel anything about it. Going back towards Germany, I never faced really any racism. I think one time, I was in Weimar, Germany. I wanted to check that out. And also there's a concentration camp called Buchenwald. And I wanted to visit that concentration camp. That was the first concentration camp I ever visited. I've also been to Auschwitz. Anyways, there was one time I walked into a church and one lady told me this is a Orthodox church. She told me that in German. And I'm like thinking, okay, it's an Orthodox church. I don't really care. And then she told me, you're not Orthodox. And then I realized, okay, if I was white, she probably wouldn't have said that to me. And I was like, okay, I just turned around and left. I didn't think anything of it. And I do know that exists. There's almost nothing I can do about it. But just to go back to the Czech Republic's, Rodrigo, I probably never told you this. The first time I went to the Czech Republic was actually in March of 2002. This was while I was living in Germany. Okay.
Right.
So I traveled all the way from Germany through East Germany and into Prague. So I did spend some time in Dresden, which is the Eastern Germany. And that's one of the few cities you go through before you take the train further into Czech Republic. Anyways, I was told that, hey, make sure not to go out at nighttime. And then I asked some of my friends, they were in West Germany, like especially ones who live in Trier on the border of Netherlands and Belgium. They're like, yes, what they say is true. You probably shouldn't go alone at nighttime. And I never went alone at nighttime. And I never felt any prejudice, but I did notice that once you go more east, people tend to get a little bit more rude. They're a little bit harder. I don't want to generalize them as all rude people, but you know, life is harder. You know, the unemployment is there. And I do know in Eastern Germany, you do have those pockets of the unfortunate neo-Nazi people, right-wing people, things of that nature. But I never felt that really when I lived in Germany. Now, let's fast forward and talk about my days in the Czech Republic, especially when I lived in Ostrava. Ostrava right. is very East Czech Republic. It's on the Polish border. I never faced any harassment. I never faced any danger. And I'll tell you a story about I was at a football match. A couple of other expats who were from Portugal were there, and I was with them in Portugal. We were in our big group. We're watching the match. And there's a couple of Czech people in front of us, and they hear me speaking English, and they hear the Portuguese speak English to me. They turn around. This is an Eastern Czech Republic, right? Okay. They turn around. They ask us, where are you guys are from? Oh, we're from Portugal. And I told them, well, I'm from the United States. Okay. And they had this, you're going to laugh. In Eastern Czech Republic, they bring everything. I don't know if it's legal now, but back then, they brought their own fireworks. They brought their own alcohol. Okay. Right. They probably still do that. I don't know. Anyway, they had a big bottle of their own alcohol. I don't know if it was Slivovice or Becherovka or whatever. They're like, oh,
at least.
But anyways, they turned around. I was like, oh, would you like a drink? I'm like, sure. And my friends like, sure. And we take a sip of their alcoholic beverage that they're offering us. And there are good people, okay, in there. And I'm gonna leave on one note, which is kind of an unfortunate note. There was one time when I was in Czech Republic, I traveled to Scotland, and I was coming back from Scotland, and I was going to take a train back from Prague to Ostrava, Czech Republic. Unfortunately, there were some football hooligans on a train, and there were police on the platform, and the football hooligans, they were looking at me, and they're yelling all sorts of things at me. And the police people told me, you know, unfortunately, you probably can't get on this train. You should wait for the next train. I had to wait about 1 hour extra for the next train to get back to Ostrava. That's probably the one negative thing that I faced, because that was impeding my ability to travel back just because of the color of my skin. But other than that, I never had any problems.
I think that police officer gave you good advice. I mean, those hooligans will harass anybody. And nevertheless, you look as you would be able to kick anybody's ass. So my next question is, how do you decompress? What kind of exercise do you do when you're not at the hospital?
Well, first of all, I'm only 5'6" and 135 pounds. That means for all your friends there, I'm only 160 centimeters tall and probably only 65 kilos. So I certainly can't kick anybody's ass, but I could probably do a good job of escaping people. And so what I like to do when I decompress, I have hobbies such as I like to go skiing and I like to go rock climbing and I go hiking. And so those are two important things for me. And also on my days off, I will lift weights and everything like that. In fact, later on today, maybe I'll do a little bit of yoga just to stretch my bones out. You know, just a couple of weeks ago, I was on a very gnarly hike where there was a lot of snow. So those are the types of things I do in my fun. And actually, last summer, you know, the summer 2020, my friend who lives in Stuttgart, Germany, we were supposed to go hike and climb the Zugspitze together. That's in the Swiss Austrian Alps. Of course, unfortunately, that didn't occur. We couldn't really travel and everything. Right. And also, that was around the time my father got sick and passed away, unfortunately. So I still wouldn't have been able to do anything like that. But hopefully, you know, we'll get to do that again one day soon, probably next year.
Are there any books you would recommend about experiences abroad, your studies, your profession, anything that you deem important or interesting?
There is one book I always go back to, and it's a book I read before I lived in Germany. It's a very wonderful story known as The Alchemist, and I'm sure some of your listeners have read it as well. It's by an author by name. I'm going to screw up his name. I apologize in advance. Paulo Coelho. If I may ask, is he from Portugal or Brazil?
He's Brazilian.
Brazilian. Got it. Anyway, I've read that book in English, and I've also read it in German. I just love that because it's about a person who is traveling and trying to find his way in life. And kind of the theme of it is to stay grounded and not forget where you're from. That's a book I really like a lot. And of course, I do have a doctor's book that's on my shelf, and I should get around to reading it. But other than that, it's How Doctors Think. And just to kind of go back to some of the German language stuff, I've gone through so many facets of studying business studies, studying German language studies, studying doctor stuff, and going through a medical residency and everything like that. The one group of teachers and professors who I'm still in touch with to this day are my former German professors. They have known me ever since I was 19 years old. I'm 41 years old right now. In a way, they've seen me grow up. Going through all the German linguistics and the literature and going through all that stuff with them, you know, that's what's really stuck with me the most.
Funny thing you say, because I went to the memorial for my high school French teacher, and she was the one that opened that door to language, culture, and eventual travel. And I was fortunate enough to tell her throughout the years before she passed that she had had that effect on me and in my life, and she met my family, and unfortunately she passed away a few years ago, but yeah. I understand what you're saying. Is there anything you would like to say before we say goodbye?
I guess your listeners have gotten a synopsis of what the last 20 years of my life have been like. And I know during this time, nobody can really freely travel and gather new experiences. And my heart does go out to those young people, the people in their late teens, early 20s, things of that nature, because in my early 20s, I was traveling, I was learning languages, I was meeting people like you and meeting so many different people, and these are lifelong friends. you know, that I've had. And these types of experiences have unfortunately been impacted by this pandemic for a lot of young people. I can kind of understand their frustration, their lack of patience. They're going to get out there and travel. They want to get out there and party. And I think if anybody can get that type of international experience that I had, especially if a lot of Americans can get that type of experience that I had, I know that eventually, as cheesy as it sounds, we can all become better people and we can all get to a better place in society. And plus, another thing is this, is that it will make you a better, I guess, more educated, more well-rounded person for when you have to make certain important decisions. For example, when you decide to, for me deciding to go into medicine, I certainly wouldn't have been able to make that decision without going through those experiences of gaining a certain amount of maturity as an expat. And as soon as we are able to, I do want to come back and travel to Europe. I don't think I'm going to travel to Europe this year, unfortunately. I want to wait. But as I told you and your listeners, I've been to 28 different countries. My goal is to eventually get to 50 countries in my lifetime. I don't know if I'll ever achieve that in my lifetime, but
well, certainly you'll be more than welcome in this country before you hop onto those other countries. So you know that you'll always be welcome here in Prague and in my house. One last thing, Babu, you mentioned that you speak Spanish. So I expect you to do an interview in my Spanish show, Entre Expatriados, pretty soon.
Yeah, I'll hopefully do that. And so I can say a couple of things. Es un gran placer hablar contigo. Y ojalá que puedo hablar en español contigo en tu podcast en lengua española.
Excelente. Dr. Babu Chalam, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for sharing your experiences and your stories. And I hope your wisdom will reach our listeners. And once again, thank you very much. All the best
to
you.
Thank you. Yeah, all the best to you. And if I can end on one note, so I spoke a little bit of Spanish. I speak a little bit of German. So es war schön mit dir zu reden. And then in Czech, děkuji moc. Thank you very much. It was great speaking with you always. And we'll meet again soon, my friend. And all the best.
Tschüss.
Tschüss. Farewell.
Care. Bye-bye.
Take care, man.
Thank you once again for listening. And I hope you'll join me in the next episode. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate the show, and leave your comments. If you want to write to me, my address is inbetweenexpats@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just type @inbetweenexpats. Until next time, take care.